Good morning. It is Monday. This is the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike, Bo, and Tiff here with you in the Kia studios. And some of you had a rough weekend, a rough sports weekend, and some of you had a great sports weekend. But it is Monday. Happy to be here with you guys and get the ball rolling. So how was the weekend other than sports?
Good. I went down to Lithonia on Saturday for the Dos Equis tailgate party down at Dudley's. Was a great time, man. Shout out to anybody that came down there and said what's up. Went down there and enjoyed some Dos Equis and hung out with a bunch of people that listened to us. And I told them, like I always do, thank you. And I'm sorry that you listen to us on a daily basis, because that's quite the task sometimes, man. But was awesome. And then got to actually ran into people having the same conversation down at the Benz yesterday. I was able to connect with them. So, yeah, I mean, rough watching the Tennessee-Bama game Saturday and then having to, endure what was Seattle against Atlanta as well. But, nonetheless, man, solid weekend, beautiful weather. I know a lot of people out there enjoying it. And here we are, man. Got to talk about it.
I just love the fact that I am at my point in my fandom with my college football team that when you beat Kentucky, you're like, yeah, boy, we beat them. Beat them good.
Yeah.
Really, really laid the wood. I mean, DJ Lagway looked great Saturday. There's a lot of hope in that program, I think. I'm not sure if Billy Napier, some people think Billy Napier is the one to lead in that hope. Georgia did not, they did, I don't even know the words.
It's all right. Keep it going.
They didn't let up. They
relentless.
Went out. I tell you what.
Need to bring back one more Wednesday?
It was very impressive. Very impressive. And I think that we forget that Kirby Smart teams, a lot like your guy, Nick Saban's teams, they get better. And
our intent was to come eat.
Okay, well you ate, Kirby. Also, Kirby Smart probably worded his complaining at postgame about a controversial call. As well as you can do it without getting yourself fined.
I love that. He sounded like Bart Scott.
I feel like he called it out. I feel like he called, like, it was pretty but blatant. He didn't drop.
He did not do it in any way.
Yeah, he was a wordsmith.
He didn't say anything that could get him fined, is what he didn't do. He was not critical in any way while being extremely critical and being truthful. And I loved it. I thought that was as good as it gets, because it's a, and let's talk about it for a second. It was the worst. It was a terrible call on the field that was overturned the wrong way.
Yeah.
The whole situation was completely mishandled by the referees from the moment they threw the flag.
Yeah. I got that Kirby Smart sound that'll be coming up and mic'd up today. And I think that's a fun conversation for a number of different reasons, because I think it just literally depends on how you're looking at it. And, I'm watching going, oh my goodness. Like, I think Herb Street and Fowler in the booth thinking the same way. They're like, wow, just keep going. But it was a great Saturday of football. Like I said, unfortunately, that Bama came up short. But Florida, you're right. I thought DJ Lagway, I thought he looked good.
Jordan Ball, the freshman running back. That's my only fear if they were firing Napier this year, is that, what happens with the portal and the NIL, because this is too unstable.
I think it's a fear you have to have either way. I think it's a fear you have to have either way this day and age in college football, man. You don't ever know what that roster looks like from year to year. Some of them look at it and go, man, we're losing, or, he barely saved his job or whatever. They might be out anyways. I mean, look at ETN. It is what it is, unfortunately, at this point. So, we'll have to break all those games down forward and backward for sure. But crazy day in the NFL as well. I don't know if you guys noticed, but I think there was – four quarterbacks stepping in due to injury, and three other backup quarterbacks for the first couple of weeks actually starting yesterday. That was kind of cool.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, yes, NFL in full swing, as it always is on Sunday. You mentioned some of the good games. One of the games that a team that is here in Atlanta did not fare so well in at home was the Falcons. They dropped their game to the Seahawks 34-14, the final score of that matchup.
Yeah, like, disappointing. Yesterday was disappointing. I'm just going to be blunt. Sitting there doing the game yesterday felt like everyone that walked into the building downed a bottle of Benadryl and sat in the stands It was flat. The atmosphere was flat. This, everything about yesterday was flat. And the Falcons played that way. Now, the Falcons need to – look, the team has to do stuff.
Why do you think that was?
Hell, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't tell you. I don't know why the crowd was as hungover as the team looked. Maybe everybody was up watching Georgia beat Texas on Saturday night. I don't know. But the teams, you have to do something to get the fans fired up. I thought effort was there. I just felt like there was no – the energy was lacking. And it was one of those – and it's one of the – that, to me, the biggest issue of all of it was this team has overcome bad moments where, you know, penalties and such. They didn't overcome any of that yesterday. They killed themselves with penalties, and they couldn't overcome it. And then what happens is, I thought, Mike, is you started pressing a little bit, and when you press, you make bad throws, you know, you kind of overanalyze the play on defense and make a gamble that doesn't pay off. When you press, you lose in the NFL.
Yeah.
Well, here's Coach Raheem Morris with Dave Archer post-game on what this team can learn from the loss.
National Football League, right? Yeah. You know, you got to come out and you got to play every week, and you got to come out ready to go every week, and we were not ready to go, clearly.
Yeah, I think that it's just one of those things where he was trying to be guarded of his guys. I think that he's like, you know, he mentioned it. I think he said, actually, they're a little bit flat yesterday. Some of the players kind of pushed back on that and were like, no, I mean, you know, it is what it is. We got to make plays. I think Jesse Bates kind of pushed back a little bit. I'm with you. The whole stadium was flat. The team was flat. It was very much like, hey, let's roll the ball out there and see if we can win the game, rather than opposed to, you know, just taking it to them, hitting them in the chin to kind of start the game off with. And I get it. And we mentioned this a number of times, and we talked about it in pregame. There is such thing as a rest deficit in terms of the NFL. When you talk about a team coming off a 10-game rest period where they have kind of that mini bye week coming off Thursday Night Football, they should probably most of the time have more energy. But I didn't think so much that it was Seattle with a ton of energy. I thought it was Atlanta just not having any and getting punched in the mouth early. And then once you tried to scratch and claw back into it, you get the penalties start rolling. A couple, inability to make some of the third down stops, I thought was really the death knell.
Well, I know you said the team had kind of pushed back against feeling flat, but Raheem Morris did say it at halftime, too, and watching that game. When he came back out, he said, we need to wake up.
Yeah.
So but I guess he had a pulse on it from the get-go, maybe different opinions.
Hard to wake up in a sleep chamber, and that's what it felt like yesterday. I mean, it was just dead. It was just weird how business-like everything was yesterday in that game. And like, they had a couple penalties. I thought they had two or three that extended drives for Seattle, and Seattle made you pay.
Yeah, they did.
And Seattle tried to shoot themselves in the foot early in the game, and then they were able to overcome it. But I did agree with what Jesse Bates said. It was 10-7. You have a penalty that derails a drive, so you have to give the ball back, and then they go right down the field. And, you know, everybody's going to blame A.J. Terrell for the touchdown that Metcalf caught, but A.J. is playing with the technique where he feels like he has inside help, and you've got both safeties in the area, and they're not anywhere in the area, so yeah. I don't know where. So it's hard for me to blame A.J. Terrell with that when he kind of – the defense at zone that they're kind of playing, he kind of turns them loose like he's got inside help, and he didn't show up.
Was that the first time you'd ever seen DK Metcalf play in person?
No.
For me, it was. And I was very impressed with just looking down on the field, how I didn't even have to look for his number. You can pick him out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's just looking down there going, oh, there he is.
It's a Julio-type presence.
It really is. Well, I was thinking like Calvin Johnson. Like Calvin Johnson, you could see from a mile away, very much in the same space that you would talk about like a Cam Newton as a quarterback. Like Calvin Johnson, you could just see from a mile away. I felt that DK is not quite Calvin Johnson size-wise, but, man, I don't know if it's just everybody else around him at the time or what it was, but you look down there and you see DK, and you're like, well, there he is. Hopefully we're able to find him on the field, and it didn't seem like at times we could.
Yeah, I've gotten to see him. That's the third time I think I've gotten to see him play in person. That's where it reminds me of, like, Julio. Is like it's just a machine. You know, it's not – You look down there and you're just like, holy man, that dude's built different.
Was there an energy issue with the players? We'll hear from the quarterback on the other side when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, the Falcons coming off a loss to the Seahawks at home 34-14. The discussion we were having earlier was whether or not there was an issue with the energy from the crowd to the players themselves. Let's hear from quarterback Kirk Cousins, who spoke with Dave Archer postgame.
Yeah, I think it's our job to bring the energy the way we play. And, you know, first series had the penalties, the pre-snap penalties that made it hard to overcome that and get the first down. And then the second drive, you know, I missed Ray on that third down. I thought we had a chance for a touchdown there. I threw it long, and that one loomed large as the game went on because we ended up missing the kick and then got a touchdown, and then had the 2-minute drive at the end of the half, didn't get anything. And so then we kicked it back to them, and they were able to go down and get points. So those four possessions, you know, we were close, and then we just didn't make the play we needed to make to come away with more points. And the second half felt like we were, you know, starting strong with a touchdown on the first drive, then got back down 10, and we were really right there, I still think, in the fourth quarter until the sack fumble, you know, on my part that I felt, you know, that started to kind of change the tone of the game.
Yeah, I think he kind of took the smart way right there of talking about that. You know, I think that's kind of the way you want him to talk about it. You don't want him to sit there and blame the fans and say, well, fans weren't really into it. They're sitting on their hands. Kind of takes the blame on his own shoulders, right? I should have made more plays. We should have awakened the crowd and everything else. And that's the attitude he's supposed to have, right? It doesn't matter if you're home, away, crowd asleep, nobody in the building, whatever it may be. You got to do the things necessary to go out and win the game. His focus can't be on the crowd. And truth be told, I don't know if the crowd had a ton to do with the outcome anyways. Like, it was flat, and I think it was disappointing a lot of different ways, but I can't sit here and say that if they would have been rowdy that the, you know, the game would have had any different outcome. It wasn't like, you know, other than the penalty-laden plays, it wasn't like third down was a massive thing or that you couldn't create havoc. And I guess you can't say either way, but it was what it was to me. It was just a sleepy atmosphere in there, and the team played like it.
Bijan Robinson did not play like it. He had a big day. Rushed for 21 times for 103 yards and a touchdown. He also caught three passes for 40 yards. So that was probably the lone bright spot in all of this for the team in that loss.
Yeah, it was the bright spot. I mean, he was our player of the game. He was our Solomon Brothers player of the game, actually. But Jean has brought it every week, though. Even the one game where he seemed to, like Tyler Allgeier, I think it was the Tampa game? Where Tyler kind of, I think it was Tampa where Tyler picked up a little bit. Maybe it was the New Orleans and Bijan, maybe like his hammy was a little banged up.
All I can remember from Tampa is the passing game. I don't remember either one of them running the ball because we passed so many times. 58 options.
Maybe that was, but then that's one. But even then he was active in the passing game. But every time he touched the ball yesterday, it was 7-8 yards, it felt like. And it was not the easy way. I can't tell you how many times, just on handoffs, he made guys miss in the backfield.
Yeah,
and he the catch he makes out on the perimeter, and when it was a little swing dump off, whatever you want to call it. First off, he has to snag it out of the sky, and then
that was something right there.
Take 1 foot forward, it felt like. Help a guy leave some laundry on the field, and then step it up. And he also took that little dump off. I think it was in the third quarter, and he ran it 26 yards, and he almost broke that one.
Yeah.
He was just phenomenal in every phase of the game yesterday, and including once again, he's the best pass pro running back I think in football.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt in my eyes, but you guys tell me if I'm wrong. I'll let both of y'all weigh in on this. I actually thought that yesterday was the best game that Bijan has had as a running back, like period. Not catching the ball out of the backfield. I know he's done that a number of times, created some explosives. But when you look at his actual runs, like you mentioned, making guys miss before the line of scrimmage, getting into the line of scrimmage, sticking your foot in the ground, breaking tackles, it's like obviously speed is a big deal for Bijan, but the use of acceleration is a bigger thing than speed probably for a guy like Bijan Robinson. I don't know. You guys tell me if I'm wrong. I thought yesterday was his best day as a running back since he has been with the Falcons. I thought it was incredible.
Well, it's his third straight 100-yard rushing game, so I would say that's probably pretty accurate right there to have that hit that done this season for him.
It's a vision thing, I think. I think his vision has gotten so much better. I think early in last year, I felt like there were times where the patience – was just off with maybe what he was seeing, and I think it's all kind of slowed down for him.
I agree.
And I think you can see it. I think you see a lot of it just in his pass protection with how he can pick Not only, like, it's one thing in being physical enough to take on a blitzing linebacker or defensive end, but to me it's the other thing, the wherewithal, the vision, the knowledge of where they're coming to be able to step in and make that play. And he's gotten that, and I think you see it in his running, in him running the ball as well.
Yeah.
And just a quick note for you, that was his first time rushing for 105 yards since he did it back against the Jags, and that was back in 2023.
Yeah. I just think, and maybe I'm reading too much into this. Maybe I'm not. All right, but we talked about how the team was a little bit flat yesterday. You go back and look at the injury report last week that this team is putting out. And twice on that injury report is Bijan, limited participant, whatever, and it just says, like, rest. He looked like the guy that had been resting for a couple days last week. He looked so explosive, so energetic, so full of playmaking ability that when I look at that, and I'm watching him yesterday, and I'm going, he looks like the guy on the injury report that had that listed next to his name. He looks like he's got fresh legs.
I also think that it's part of the reason why we should stop trying to say that we don't need both and one's better than the other, is I think that you're seeing how they complement each other. Like last week, you were able to lean on Tyler at the end of the game, right? In that 4-minute offense moment, whatever you want to call it, where let's just grind this thing to it's over. Let's just grind it out and get this clock running. And Tyler was your guy, and that's what he really is good at. And then this week, Bijan is healthy. I mean, I say healthy, but like you said, fresh. He's got that extra burst in it. I mean, and he has the game. And next week, maybe it's there's nothing wrong with him rotating. But I can tell you something. He had another 100 yards. He's almost at 500 already for the season. And he added another touchdown. He's just playing well. And Drake London, say something, the chemistry between Drake London, Kirk talked about it in the clip that we played of Kirk with Arch. He talked about missing Ray Ray. And that one was that was a huge play in the game.
Yeah.
He doesn't ever miss Drake, it feels like. It just feels like and Drake is making catches that they are not easy at all. I mean, I'm telling you, he is the Tony Gonzalez to Matt Ryan.
I like that.
That is what he is.
I like that. My man, Tony G.
Because if there's nothing there, I know this guy can make the catch in traffic, contested. I know that the ball, his route's going to be sharp. This is a safe throw, even though it's not necessarily it's not necessarily a clean throw because it's going through all this traffic.
Quick correction, he had 103 yards again. But can we talk about the penalties, though, in this game? And then also the false starts that happened. That was what jumped out to me in the broadcast. I think they had three of them, and that doesn't happen at home.
Yeah, great. Jonathan Vilma, I'm sure, was probably the one on the call. No, I'm just kidding.
He
drives me nuts.
Again,
and I know he drives Falcons fans, but I think
but
to your
point.
But
9 penalties for 72 yards total. So
I think to your point,
I
think the false starts definitely jump out to you. I think Kyle Hinton had one after he enters the game for Matthew Bergeron, which was frustrating. But to me, it was all about the third down penalties, right? When you look at the penalties that you were getting off the field on third down, Nate Lamon had a hands to the face. Damon Harris with one of the more unfortunate roughing the passer penalties that I've ever seen. Literally just bumped into Arnold Ebiketie and fell down. So a couple of those were definitely unfortunate. There was an OPI, I believe, that brought things back at a certain time. And then there's one they picked up. I think it was on Julian Love that was supposed to be a pass interference. They just picked it up and said, it was incidental contact.
Which is garbage because...
ridiculous. Like, how many times, like, every corner ever is like, man, I didn't mean to. It's incidental contact.
But the problem is that the only reason why those four players came together in that is because Mooney was held across the field. He was being held, running his route, and it bottlenecked everything. And then you have a four-car collision or player collision, whatever you want to call it. And it's just terrible. But I tell you what, Bill Vinovich was on one from the start because I have never heard. In fact, I don't think he's supposed to do what he did in the coin toss. Did you guys hear that?
Yes.
Where he's
so
the Falcons win the toss. They defer. And so the loser of the toss has to then, when the team defers, you have to say that you want the ball. If not, the Falcons will get the ball twice.
Yeah, he inserted himself.
Yeah, he goes, you want to take the ball.
You want to say yes.
And it's like, hey, man, you're not supposed to do that.
Keep your mouth shut, Bill.
Like, let him screw that up.
Shut up, Bill.
So he inserted himself very early into the game.
I agree,
man. And never, Never took himself
out of
it.
That was a little bit crazy.
Yeah, I wonder if you can complain about that to the league. Like, I wonder.
Maybe they'll put out a statement.
Yeah, like, yeah. We should, you know what?
Everybody throw my beer bottle.
Yeah, they should have thrown beer on the field. And maybe Vinovich could have changed it then. Who knows?
Well, throwing beer on the field, that brings me to the tease. We'll get you up to date on Georgia and Texas. What went down in Austin? Is this a statement win for the Dogs? We'll discuss next when we come back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm.
Nobody believed. Nobody gave us a chance. Your whole network doubted us. Nobody believed us. And then they tried to rob us with calls in this place. And these guys are so resilient. You know what I mean? We talked about intent. What was our intent when we walked on the field? Our intent was not to take pictures, not to do all the superstar stuff. Our intent,
hell yeah,
our intent was to eat. Our intent was to come eat and be hungry. I'm not interested in all the bells and whistles. What I want is a team that fights their ass off, and they did tonight.
That was Kirby Smart talking to ESPN's Katie George and calling out the network while talking to her as well. Georgia taking out the number one team in the land, 30-15 in Austin, Texas. So a lot of people, I'll say probably more than a lot of people, did not see this coming, including some of the people in this room.
Yeah. Nobody believed.
Well,
just the other two.
Did you pick Georgia?
I don't pick anybody. Remember? Okay, remember? I'm neutral.
I feel like you're
right?
Talking trash, but yeah, you didn't pick either one.
I'm not. Yeah, you know, I'm just neutral.
It felt like I was being no. I'll be upfront and honest about it. I didn't think Georgia's front seven could hit the gear that they hit Saturday night.
And they did.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point of me bringing it up is they did. They played like a very special unit. Honestly, I think that, and Georgia fans, I think, will agree with me on this. I think Carson Beck in the first half played very much like he did probably at the start of the Alabama game, where he's turned the ball over multiple times. There's miscommunications and such like that. But yet Texas couldn't capitalize on it because Georgia's front seven played so aggressively, so lights out, so matter of fact, so businesslike, that their front seven alone, their defensive line alone, vaulted them back towards the top of the standings. I thought they were absolutely incredible.
There were
and hats
a total
off to
of
Kirby
seven
Smart.
Sacks in this one. So, yeah. And I'd have to go look, but that probably is the most that they've had in a game this season, I would fair to say.
Yeah, I thought it was just an incredible job of coaching that front seven and making them play with their hair on fire. And look, I liked Steve Sarkisian in this matchup. It didn't turn out the way I thought it would, though, man. Georgia Bulldogs came out and got done business-like mentality on the road in a tough environment for sure.
Well, remember when we were in here after the Georgia-Alabama game and we were all talking about, and I said that Kirby got out-coached by Kalen DeBoer. It was also the last time Kalen DeBoer out-coached anybody. But the reality of the situation was Kirby went in there into Austin and gave Steve Sarkisian a masterclass on how to coach a championship-caliber team in a championship type atmosphere and game. He out-coached Sark, and Sark was panicky all night. I still don't understand what the hell I'm going to pull Quinn Ewers for Arch Manning.
You didn't like that? I thought you would have liked that.
Well, I think it was a panic move, and it didn't work out for him.
Because he took some shots. Quinn Ewers got that first blitz. Yeah. I mean, he got rocked, and then I think his leg got kind of banged up too later on. So I was wondering if it was, hey, even though he hung in there, but maybe they pulled him because of that, or they pulled him because they felt like they needed a spark and they felt like they could get it with Arch Manning.
Sark said that at halftime. He said, I wanted to calm him down a little bit and see if we could get a little something going.
Yeah.
And it didn't work because Arch Manning didn't fare any better than Quinn Ewers. And then, in fact, Quinn Ewers came back in and was able to get some footing a little bit in the game and they did close the gap. I just think you have to be, like you said, impressed with Georgia's front seven on defense. They were phenomenal. And even with some of the injuries that they're playing through, they were absolutely phenomenal. They outplayed Texas up front.
I think Texas got three NFL guys on their line, at least. And for Georgia to do what they did against them, pretty incredible. And hats off to them. I to go back to the Arch Manning thing, I kind of liked it that he did that because I think what it does, it gives you a plus one in the run game, adds a different dynamic as opposed to what Quinn Ewers is doing. And I think, honestly, too often do head coaches kind of sit on their hands when things aren't going well and instead of trying to find a spark. Steve Sarkisian was like, I ain't going out like that, man. I'm going to try everything I got in my back pocket, put him in, then thought, you know what? That's probably not fair to do against this front seven with a guy that hasn't played a ton of football in games like that. So maybe I'll just take him back out.
Yeah.
That throw Texas off. And I mean, I know they were trailing. Georgia never trailed in this matchup. I know that both quarterbacks have played before, but this was kind of a little bit of back and forth.
Yeah, I think Georgia's front seven is what threw Texas off all night. And
I would agree
and
with
they've
that.
Got playmakers all over the place. You know, I'm over there sick to my stomach, the whole Isaiah Bond thing, just having to follow that saga of him not being at Bama anymore and having a lot of fun in Sarkisian's offense, though he's been banged up. So I don't know, man. I just think that the credit solely goes, in my opinion, to that front seven, that defensive line of Georgia that absolutely made it impossible for it felt like the Texas to do anything.
And what about the resiliency of Carson Beck? Because the early turnovers, what an interception, and still being able to bounce back from that. And help to lead this team.
Well, yeah. Carson Beck's got to calm down. He's got. I feel like there's a little bit of pressing early in these games.
The guy is playing a ton. He is a little jittery,
dude. They're not taking
three total interceptions on the day.
They're not taking the Lambeau back. All right, it's yours, dude. Just relax. I don't see the need to press. Like he's going out there trying to prove something at times. And just take what the defense gives you. And now that I think the defense, the way they played, should be some reassurance for like, hey, it's not all on you, man. Like, yeah, you don't have to. You
go
can
Brad Johnson on these dudes. Go Brad Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all it is. Go Brad Johnson on these guys.
Just relax. I like Carson. I think he's a smart dude. I think he's a good player. I just think he needs to calm down.
I do think, though, it's kind of to Tiffany's point. I feel like at times that I've thought, and you know, before this season and during the beginning of the season, that either one of these quarterbacks could have been like the first overall pick. I'm not sure I came into this game thinking either one of them would be the first overall pick. I'm not sure who actually is at this point. There's been a number of quarterbacks kind of thrown around, but
you're saying they faced an NFL front seven is what you're
saying. Yeah, I mean, like I just think that neither one of these quarterbacks looked like I would take him first overall in the draft. And you mentioned it, kind of hats off to Carson Beck for getting things kind of realigned and getting that offense moving in the right direction. But I think Georgia fans, and maybe y'all can correct me if I'm wrong on Twitter, but I feel like Georgia fans still have questions about the quarterback play at this point, but it was a gritty win by the defense that brought you home. And no shock, because it's Kirby Smart coach team, and that's what that man does.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This NFL draft this year is weak from what I'm hearing.
I mean, quarterback, yeah.
Well, it's weak overall.
Yeah.
I was listening to someone the other day say there's probably only like 15 to 17 players that are actually worthy of a first-round grade. So my point is that I think these guys are going to go top five only because of the lack of talent throughout the rest of the draft.
Well, we saw from Georgia in this game what it takes to win a football game. You got to run the ball, and Travis Etienne, three touchdowns in this one, and then you got to play defense. So corner Dylan Everett coming up big time for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, We're going to talk later on in the show during Mic'd Up about the whole trash on the field, referees convening, the statement and everything
SEC.
Else. But, speaking of turnovers. No, I just, like I said, just a light. I just thought that the physicality was just a notch higher for Georgia. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what that potion is for Kirby Smart. I've seen it firsthand. It's just an edge that he gets his guys to play with, and you hear him, backs against the wall. Nobody believed in us. Usually when Kirby says that, I'm like, you're a freaking liar, man. Y'all are Georgia. This weekend, he was spot on because I didn't believe in him, and I believe in him now. So hats off to him.
Well, that's why you didn't win all your picks. That's why I went 3-1.
We'll discuss that in our Man Up Monday.
I can't believe you're bragging about
hour.
Your
–
I said they were going to cover.
You were likely split this weekend. Happy on Saturday, not so happy on Sunday. But hopefully you're getting your week off right. We'll recap that Falcons loss on the other side of the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're in our 7 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. We are coming off a Falcons loss this Monday to the Seahawks at home, 34-14. Was the final score, I should say. We've covered a lot of ground with this matchup. Something we haven't talked about yet was a matchup within the game that Coach Raheem Morris said he was looking forward to seeing, and that was with A.J. Terrell and D.K. Metcalf. So I want to get your thoughts on that because I know, Mike, you said even from just looking at D.K. Metcalf on the field, you could
see. Looks like a robot. Looks like a robot. And that's after. No, I think obviously his numbers are good. The backbreaker before halftime was just that. It was a backbreaker in a lot of different ways. I think Jesse mentioned that. I think AJ Terrell. It's frustrating because I don't know that Raheem wanted it to sound the way he did when he talked about the build up to that matchup. Like, can't wait to see those guys, because now you're going to go straight and look at DK's numbers and think, oh man, AJ just got smoked the whole game. And I don't necessarily think it was that.
And that's not the case. Yeah.
When here's the thing. When you pass as often as they do, and you have a receiver like they rely on in DK Metcalf, it should never be one man's job.
No.
And second of all, I don't think it was. I think they tried to involve other players and play, you know, a style against him that would benefit. And it didn't work out. And I don't think that's all on AJ Terrell. I thought he played a decently physical caliber of a game. I know that there's probably a couple plays he'd like to have back. But I don't think this is all on his shoulders to the point where you're like, man, he got smoked. It just DK doing DK things, and in the end, he gets his numbers, and you're going to look at AJ because he just got paid and he's CB1. But
it
was DK doing DK things. Yeah,
a lot of people are going to like look at things like, oh, it all falls on one guy, and that's his player, and that's not how football works.
Well, not when you're playing zone coverage and you got what, like the outside technique, which means you're basically lining up where you're funneling people inside, and he did funnel DK's route was obviously across the middle of the field, and you got safeties there and they're not there. I mean, you're supposed to have help there on that touchdown, and yep. He didn't have it. So that's what drives me nuts, is you see a guy in the general area, and you're like, oh, see, he blew that coverage. It's like, well, yeah. You don't know what the coverage was, most likely.
Yeah.
You can only go by what you think you know, and so that's the one.
Happens to O-line all the time. Man, you know.
No, they're always at fault.
Running back gets blasted, and you're like, man, the O-line sucks. And you're like, well, they can't pick up nine people. There's only five of them.
This is true.
But here's the thing. I will say this. DK had almost 100 yards receiving. It came on four catches.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not exactly like this guy went off and it's probably a bad comparison, but these are kind of a Mike Evans style of game, but Mike Evans, when he goes off in the Falcons, has more catches than that, but it seems like they're all explosive. You know what I mean? Like when you get him down there, you're like, man, Mike Evans again. And you look back and you go, well, he only had four catches, but he had 100 yards. Like, how did that even happen?
One of those was a 35 yarder. The other, I think, was like 20 something.
Brutal.
And that 35, I think, was a touchdown. So, but that was the drive. That was the play. That honestly was the play. You can look back at the strip sack and say that was the play where the game was over. But the game, the momentum in the game changed when DK Metcalf caught that touchdown to make it 17-7 in front of the half. Because before that, it's 10-7, and you're right there in that. You've survived the wave, right? You've survived a lot of self inflicted mistakes, and you've been able to just keep it close, even a missed field goal. I mean, it could have been 10-10 if Youngway makes that 53-yarder early in the game. But that was the one that kind of broke your back, and everything changed after that.
Well, post-game, Kirk Cousins, the QB, he caught up with Dave Archer of the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. This interview is brought to you by Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy one-hour drive from Atlanta.
Kirk, energy in the building seemed to be kind of flat. I thought both teams kind of started kind of slow. Tell me about what it felt like in the game.
Yeah, I think it's our job to bring the energy the way we play. And, you know, first series had the penalties, the pre-snap penalties that made it hard to overcome that and get the first down. And then the second drive, you know, I missed Ray on that third down. I thought we had a chance for a touchdown there. I threw it long, and that one loomed large as the game went on because we ended up missing the kick. And then got a touchdown, and then had the 2-minute drive at the end of the half, didn't get anything. And so then we kicked it back to them, and they were able to go down and get points. So those four possessions, you know, we were close, and then we just didn't make the play we needed to make to come away with more points. And the second half felt like we were, you know, starting strong with a touchdown on the first drive, then got back down 10, and we were really right there, I still think, in the fourth quarter until the sack fumble, you know, on my part that I felt, you know, that started to kind of change the tone of the game.
Well, there went a whole bunch you could have done about that. I know you're trying to escape and get the ball out of there. Tell me about the run game. You guys got the cranked up the run game, got it going pretty good. Looked like did they change anything? Because it started, they kind of started to swell up against the run against you guys late.
Run game was good. You know, Bijan went for 100 yards. Thought we had a lot of productive runs, including the start of the 2-minute drive at the end of the half. Run game was good. You know, I think being down, I think it was hard to be you know, patient with the run game, but it was good every time we called on it. And so, you know, I guess that was encouraging to see.
When you come back this next week, obviously you guys have played extremely well on offense, maybe not quite as good as you would like to this week. Tell me about your thought process as you go back to work, get ready for this next game.
Yeah, you know, this is pro football, and you have to go back and you know, have candor about, hey, I got to be better, this has to be better, make the improvements, corrections, and then put together a strong week of practice, and then go with a resolve to Tampa and plan on playing your best football you possibly can. That's what it takes to win in this league, and that's what we have to do.
Kirk, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Arch.
That was Kirk Cousins, the Atlanta Falcons quarterback, with Dave Archer wrapping up this loss to the Seahawks, 34-14. I know we won't get ahead, but he did mention that Tampa game. This was a tough stretch for this team because you go from Seahawks to Bucks, Saints again, right, I believe, if I had that correct. You know, it's kind of a little bit of a
Cowboys game, I think, in there.
And Cowboys are, Tiff. Yes, Cowboys
mixed
in there.
Week before Saints, yep, you're right.
Yeah, because it's weird because we've played so many home games, and then we go on the road, and we come back and play home again, and then we're like, oh, on the road for two straight weeks before the bye.
It's worrisome for me. That what you just said is worrisome for me.
Well, what's worrisome for me is you've got three losses, and they're all at home.
I know. Well, not with that, but
it's hard to win on the road in this league.
Like, you don't win all your road games, right? You just don't. So the fact that you have so many remaining, I'm like, man, like we need to start knocking out some of these home games along the way because it gets harder and harder.
These were not easy games at home. These were not games that you, and it's like that in the NFL. You're not just going to go ahead and claim a W, even though some people might feel like you can.
Yeah.
But especially against, you had the Chiefs at home, you had the Bucks,
you had the Saints, you had the Steelers.
And the Steelers,
And the only one that's under 500 in any of that group is the Saints. And honestly, it's unfair to look at them at 2-5 right now and say, well, you should have won that. Why'd you have trouble? Because they were 2-1 when they came in here.
Yeah.
And they were not banged up to the extent they are now. Taysom Hill was injured, but that's pretty much it. They have since had injury after injury after injury, and now they're at 2-5, including, you know, Derek Carr's missed a couple of weeks. But they were at pretty full strength when they came in here.
And I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying that, and I know you know that, but I'm just saying that these were hard teams that you were playing in your backyard.
It needs to be heard. What you're saying needs to be said, and it needs to be heard.
Let me bring this back around as well, because I had the same feeling Saturday postgame that I did Sunday postgame, and that is that the way that my two teams played this weekend, and I'm going to lump Bama into that because they're lost to Tennessee, none of them feel like shoe-ins, to your point, Tiff.
Yeah,
it's like you ain't going to look at any game after this weekend for Bama or Atlanta. I know Georgia fans probably feeling a little bit different, but I bet Texas fans feel the same way. You're not going to look at any of the games down the stretch and think that those are locks because there's too much up and down. There's too much back and forth. There's all this room for error that it seems like one week everything goes right and the next week everything goes wrong. For you to think that any game is going to be easy down the street. I mean, Dallas has looked terrible. I guarantee you that's going to be a tough game.
That's what I'm saying.
How about Washington when you started the year? You looked at Washington and go, oh, yeah, good, Washington. Rookie quarterback, no big deal. All of a sudden you're like, oh, crap. That ain't going to be a lot of fun.
And they still got the win yesterday. Great, yeah.
Oh, you thought Minnesota was going to be easy. Sam Darnold,
oh my God,
bum.
Dude.
Oh, really? You think so?
It just makes it so much funnier that we, you know, you talk before the season, everybody's like, well, the Falcons got the easiest schedule.
You don't do that.
Shut up!
No, we don't.
You know, let's talk about, somebody hit me up and said, and Hakeem, he's a big listener, and he's a part of Squid Nation, I believe.
Probably not.
And he goes, well, unwillingness to get sacks. And I just think we should talk a little bit about what they did yesterday. They were extremely aggressive yesterday. They had a lot of pressure on Geno. Two things to me are the reason this team is not getting sacks. First off, I think you're playing so far off in the secondary that you're playing veteran quarterbacks, and they're able to recognize that, hey, you're playing off, and when they see and they are – obviously, probably you're showing some of your hand a little bit with some of these blitzes. And they're getting the ball out quickly because you're giving them so much space in these routes. These receivers have 7 yards, and you can get the ball out quick. The other thing is When you get there, you have to finish the play. And we haven't finished plays. We flushed Geno multiple times, and you couldn't get him on the ground.
Yeah.
You couldn't get him on the ground. One of it's actually it turned into a grounding call, but you've got to get quarterbacks on the ground. 2 weeks in a row, we have been there, and we have missed sacks because we haven't finished the drill.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm honestly tired of kind of making excuses for it. When the first few games you play, I'm like, well, the quarterback's mobile. You're going to attack differently. You're going to stay in your rush lanes. You know, when you look at last week, you're like, man, Chuba Hubbard's running. You're more worried about that. You don't mind if Andy Dalton sits in the pocket, this, that, and the other. Look on your you got your card right in front of you. All right, your right tackle on that card is scratched out. And number 65, who on your card is the backup left tackle, who really is their fourth option. He made his first start at right tackle yesterday, Michael Jarrell. What was the school? What's his school listed on there? Because I can't remember where he's from. He said he played in front of crowds of about 3,000 before.
It's Finley.
Finley.
Which is in Carolina, I believe.
It just... I can't make an excuse for that. At one point, and I saw Matthew Judon at one point, I was like, man, he smells blood in the water. And then right after that, James Smith Williams gets a sack on that guy.
I apologize. Like, it's in Ohio.
I'm like, man, it's about to go down. Like, they can tell that this guy, it's like, hey, I played a good first quarter. And then all of a sudden, he just locked it back down. And well, we couldn't expose the guy. And he's making his first start as a rookie out of Finley as a sixth-round pick.
Matthew Judon, dude, where you at?
No bueno, dude. Because, wasn't good.
Because I'm
red sleeves.
I'm a Judon guy. Yeah, but I don't know. Something's not right. Something's missing there. James Smith Williams was extreme. He played well yesterday. Till he got hurt, he came back in, still played good, but he played well.
When we come back, we're going in the huddle. But also yesterday, a champion was crowned and a championship matchup was set. We'll discuss. All when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game.
I think in the postseason it's about the fight, and we got a lot of talent too. It's gonna be a great World Series. I think this is what the baseball world wanted.
Oh, that was Roberts, skipper for the Dodgers. Now that the World Series has been set, the Dodgers beat the Mets 10-5 yesterday, and then on Saturday the Yankees beat the Guardians 5-2. So unfortunately, Bo won't get what he really wants, which would have been an all New York matchup.
This is what the baseball world wanted.
I think once it was
cue that up for you.
Yeah, once it was Dodgers, Mets, Yankees, Cleveland. It was Cleveland or die for me, and I died.
Yeah.
This is you want to know what buying your way to the top looks like?
I was going to say the same thing, man.
This is it.
I've talked on here before about how I feel like the NFL is the best league in the world because it's the most fair, right? You had the salary cap straight across the board. You had the draft straight across the board. It is what it is. It's like it's a fair league. It's a balanced league. Everybody has a shot at it from year to year to remake everything you're doing. And I think this is one of the things that some people get turned off by about Major League Baseball, that you can spend three times, four times, eight times as much as some other teams and wind up at the end. Now, I'm not taking credit away from these guys. They still have to go out there and perform. But it seems like we've been blessed recently with some Cinderella stories, and we weren't blessed with that this year.
Also,
this is what the baseball world wanted.
I don't know.
Yeah, I like Dave Roberts as a player.
Oh, dude,
you salty
don't,
now. You salty
don't
now. I'm not even gonna let you do it. Look,
here we go.
Not anymore.
Don't do this, no one, man.
How out of touch can you be in reality? This is what the baseball world wanted.
In his world, that's exactly what it sounds like.
Well, that's not the entire baseball world.
I will
world.
Say, from a global perspective,
everybody at the Major League
how the
Office
Yankees
wanted it.
Play out throughout the world. I am not saying that I agree with anything. I'm just pointing out. A fact there. I'm going to keep it moving real quick.
I don't know what world of baseball is.
I just love that you're like, you're listening to him and you're looking up at the sky and you go, you know, I liked him as a player.
now he's on your list. Okay.
Here we go.
He also been an underachiever as a manager.
The World Series is set. Also a champion was crowned yesterday. The New York Liberty defeated the Minnesota Lynx in the WNBA Finals 67-62. I also want to point out, this was kind of cool, when Sabrina Ionescu is posing with the championship trophy, she's sitting down, and then she gets a muscle cramp. And if you guys have seen this, it's quite funny, because I think that's the first time that's probably happened, but just shows you how hard they played. And to get a title is pretty cool, especially against a team like the Lynx.
The Lynx coach, you know what's funny is both coaches in the last two games have complained about officials, because the Liberty coach complained after game four, and then the Reeves, the coach for the Lynx, was said that they were cheated and the title was stole from them. So she will be a little bit lighter in her next paycheck.
I will say, what a great way to cap off what's been a phenomenal year for the WNBA. So let's go in the huddle. Lots of news to get to in the NFL. Lots of injury news, that is. So Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson, he suffered what appears to be a season-ending right Achilles injury, but will undergo further testing for confirmation. This according to coach Kevin Stefanski, and this coming after the team lost 21-14 to the Bengals on Sunday.
Yeah,
did not look good.
The slow-mo of it looked a lot like Aaron Rodgers did last year, where he kind of plants that back foot. All of a sudden, that heel hits the ground. Some guys have said that, you know, that I've known that have done this, it feels like your shoe came off. That's exactly what it looked like with Deshaun Watson. Obviously, an emotional scene with him down on the field. Look, man, he hasn't played very well for Cleveland this year. He played what was probably going to be his best game. I think his stat line when he finished this year was like 15 of 17 or something like that. He was actually playing pretty well and goes down. DTR gets put in, Jameis Winston gets put in, and nonetheless, looks like the season's over for him.
Yeah, the worst trade and contract in NFL history continues to look worse. I mean, I know that it's an injury, but that's the reality situation is that's accounted. That's rough, part man. Of it. That's how you look at it. It was odd to me that the day they bumped Jameis from second to third on the chart as far as how they were gonna have those guys come out. This happens. It was just weird. It's just weird how it all played out.
Weird day. On to the Commanders. Well, they don't know yet if quarterback Jaden Daniels will miss any time. He suffered a rib injury in their win over Carolina. Atlanta connections in that one with, of course, Dan Quinn being the head coach. And then in comes Marcus Mariota, tossing a touchdown or two in this one to help seal the victory for them. So hopefully they'll get some good news on Jaden Daniels, though, because he's been a lot of fun to watch.
I found myself kind of happy for Marcus Mariota in this instance. I don't know why. Obviously the legend has been written about him, but I do feel a certain way, Tiff, that I feel like he did quit on his team a couple of years ago, and that's kind of tough for me to stomach, although I agree with you. I think he's probably a pretty good dude. But him kind of getting these chances to be a backup, then coming in and actually playing well in a reserve role, I think, honestly, the bigger story of this game is probably what the opposing team looked like in Carolina, because it's no bueno when you talk about that team right now.
Yeah, it's the Andy Dalton effect is now worn off.
Woo!
And it's back to – now it's kind of the pumpkin. He's turned into a pumpkin, and I don't mean that because they have similar hair colors. It's just kind of the way it goes. And the Jaden Daniels thing I hate – because now there's a chance we don't get to see Jaden Daniels versus Caleb Williams next week at 4:25, and I think that is a matchup we're all looking forward to seeing. So I kind of hate that. Hopefully he is
the. It's the matchup the football world wants. Oh no, okay. No,
thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the football world wants the Falcons in Tampa Bay at 1:00 on Sunday. That's what the football world really wants.
A lot of backups got time yesterday, and then I guess you can't say if he was a backup or not. But he was at a time. I'm talking about Russell Wilson with the Steelers now, because he gets in Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football.
It's hard to be a backup when you never name a starter, Tiff.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's why I was going back and forth, right? But how did – you know, Mike Tomlin kind of did a – they were talking about it, a good job managing this whole thing. But anyway, Pittsburgh Steelers, they win 37-15 over the New York Jets on Sunday Night Football, with Russell Wilson throwing for two touchdowns, and he also ran for another.
I'll be honest, watching this game, first of all, I'm a massive Mike Tomlin fan. I know that, like, he has his ups and downs as a head coach. I'm sure that Pittsburgh fans at times want him out, want him in, want him in the Hall of Fame, whatever it is. I love the way he handled this situation. He's very matter of fact. And I'll be honest, I looked at this game last night and I thought, man, what a missed opportunity the Falcons had in week one to be able to go out and do some things and beat this Pittsburgh team that was not playing well. And now, with Mr. Dangerous starting at quarterback, they looked pretty freaking good last night at times.
He prefers to go by Mr. Unlimited. And he did look pretty good last night. They looked good. George Pickens had a nice night, 111 yards and a touchdown. The seven games they've thrown for more than 200 yards in three of them, Russell Wilson now owns one of them. So,
Mr. Unlimited.
Yeah, thank you, Russ.
A couple more things to get to, but I do want to highlight Ricky Parsall, the rookie, getting in his first NFL game. I think it was 50 days after being shot in an attempted robbery. So he made his 49ers debut. So that was incredible there for them.
Yeah, good for Ricky Pearsall. Guess what? His targets are about to go up because it looks like Brandon Ayuk tore his ACL yesterday.
That was the other news.
That's what they fear. a rough game for the Niners. But if you went with Squid's picks, you know that Andy Reid is now 22-4 coming off bye weeks. He was 21-4 going into yesterday. They go into San Francisco, get the job. Brock Purdy's not his best game, but then again, that team, McCaffrey down. Now Ayuk is down.
Debo went out in that game for a period of time. I'm pretty sure he didn't come back in.
Yeah, so he's been banged up. It is one of those lost seasons, it feels like, for San Francisco because of the injuries. But they hung in there for a little bit.
I'm not ready to say it's
there for a second.
I think if you can get Christian McCaffrey back and you can get kind of Ricky Pearsall involved, I still think you have some nice pieces to be able to get some things done.
Go to that first part.
If you can get Christian McCaffrey back.
Yeah. Do you realistically think there's even a chance?
I don't know.
I don't know anymore either.
I honestly have no idea because
like
it seems like
off the grid.
If it was just the tendonitis that we would have probably been seeing him or at least seeing him getting close at this point.
A couple more injuries to get to. Raiders, their quarterback O'Connell, he has a broken thumb, so in came Gardner Minshew. And then you had Brian Daboll making the QB switch to try to give the Giants a spark in what amounted to a loss to the Eagles. So Daniel Jones was pulled in that one, and he came out and said, yeah, he wasn't happy about it.
Yeah, that's a tumultuous. That looks like a tumultuous relationship anyways, and one that's probably coming to an end soon.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a number of different backup quarterbacks. How about Michael Penix making his first throw yesterday as well? So
you know what's funny? Jace McClellan, first action, and he got like 5 or 6 carries.
Yeah.
No one. I don't know if anyone spoke to him. You look over at Michael Penix. He threw one pass, and it was just like a gaggle of people around
him. Casey Washington got some burn as well.
How about Casey Washington with a little turn up field?
Dog.
It's my dude right there.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart, Lasting Clean. There is always a chance. That's what Atlanta United is saying. We'll get you caught up on what they accomplished, and we have a mic'd up.
Yeah, mic'd up. We're going to go back to Austin, Texas on Saturday night, kind of relive the craziness that was a bottle being thrown on the field or maybe a couple thousand bottles being thrown on the field. Kirby's reaction, was it the right or wrong thing to do? Was it the right or wrong thing to do? We'll relive that coming up next on Mic'd Up. It's Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
There it is! Atlanta United is going to the playoffs!
Get the reservation ready at Poutineville. We'll see you in Montreal.
I don't even know what to do with that. That was our Mike Conti and Jason Longshore on the call of Atlanta United's win over Orlando 2-1. And yes, they're going to the playoffs. There was just a 10% chance that this team would make it. And interim manager Rob Valentino, he was heard shouting, "No one believed we could do it."
Sounded like Kirby. Kirby after the game. No one believed in us.
Tiff, if you don't know what poutine is, it's an authentic Canadian recipe. Are you?
No, I traveled the world this summer. So,
did you go to Canada at any point in time?
Tiffany
is cultured. Tiffany's very cultured.
Yeah, I guess.
Worldly. Check my passport.
She's
Do they still do that? The
let me tell you something. She can't run from big time when she drops comments like that and posts Instagram posts of her. Of her,
suitcase. Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, I'm sorry, DJ. Call people out. I can call you out too, Tiff.
Well, I'm sorry, it's not meat.
That's right.
Slanging on
Guess
IG.
What? Guess what? I'll be posting my meat soon enough on the Instagram again. It's coming back, baby.
Anyhow, not the to meat change man the is topic back. From you guys. Atlanta United. Atlanta United held my weekend together. After I watch Bama lose against Tennessee, and I'm at in Dudley's in Lithonia hanging out there, buddy. Kind of following Atlanta United again. They get a goal in the first, probably the 6th or 7th minute. Get that goal, and I'm like, oh, okay. So, I'm headed home to watch Texas, Georgia. Atlanta United obviously not paying close attention on the field, but DC's 3-0 loss to Charlotte keeps them alive. And what a moment. What a moment, Tiff.
What else was a moment in this game was the 89th minute in which Orlando did score, but VAR ruled it a handball. Listen to the reaction from Conti and Longshore.
He's been told to go take a look. Okay. He's taken his look.
He's walking away. What's the call?
He Handball! Handball! It's no goal! It is no goal! Atlanta gets a lifeline.
Yeah, that was the moment that Orlando thought they had ruined their rivals' season and opportunity at the playoffs, and yet after everything calms down, you go to the VAR, you get the overturn. Just a magical moment, I think, for Atlanta United, and obviously they'll be able to press forward into the playoffs, and it seems like everything's in front of them, right? When you look at Atlanta United, everything's kind of in front of them, being able to do a number of different things, but it's been a cool season so far. So a lot of turnover, a lot of different faces in different places in terms of where you were when you started the season, but nonetheless, Atlanta United presses on. All right, let's hit a mic, though. It was the overturned call heard around the world. We got to dive into this just a little bit. Now, if you weren't aware, on Saturday night, Georgia went to Austin and played the Texas Longhorns, the number one Texas Longhorns, and took care of business, man. I disrespected Georgia last week. I said I didn't think they could get it done. They went out and absolutely proved me and what seems like everybody else in the country wrong. And Kirby Smart obviously let everybody know about that. But the situation happens. They're able to Texas is able to pick a ball off. All right. A lot of things were kind of going wrong at this point. There was a big moment in the game. And then all of a sudden, because of this call, things started flying on the field. Here's the reaction from Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit in the middle of the game.
Georgia keeps the ball with a first down.
Someone has shown their displeasure in a stupid way by throwing a beer can on the field. That's an enormous call, and I don't know about that at all.
I don't either. Sark doesn't usually get that animated, but man, this is a huge call. Contact both ways. Both guys looking at the football.
The students are now raining bottles down. And this is unfortunate. This is going to delay the game. That's the student section down there in the corner. They're not going to win the Taco Bell contest at this rate.
They're not going to win the Taco Bell contest at this rate, right? And then what happens is the referees huddle up during the middle of this entire delay of game. And they overturn the call. They're like, you know what, man? Upon further conversation, not review, because you can't review it. Upon further conversation amongst the referees, as you are raining beer down onto the field, we have actually overturned this call. I thought Kirby Smart was going to levitate out of his shoes.
And he should have. This is one of the few times you can say they got it right the wrong way.
That's actually a good way to put it. My question was going to be, in the end, did the right thing happen?
Well, no. Because they never should have huddled, because stuff should have never been thrown on the field. They should have.
But if you're going to go that far, the call should never have been made because there was no pass.
I agree. But they should, when they originally, before he made the call, they should have huddled then and got it right. What changed? Okay. What changed? And I'm not a Georgia fan. I'm not a Texas fan.
It's a good question.
What changed?
What changed is he was sitting there scratching his head going, man, I am looking at that on that like a $1 billion video board, and that is not the right call.
Which you're not supposed to look at.
Good. But here's what I'll say, though. And I'm in agreement with you. But in the end, I'm kind of glad they got the call right. Don't you just want them to get it right in the end, whether or not they're looking at the video board?
Well, yes, but no, because now it just Kirby nailed it. I don't think Kirby could have said anything. He said it any better that now this is a precedent that if you just delay the game and have your fans pitch a tantrum, boom.
And here's my next question.
But it was the
you.
Texas fans pitching the tantrum.
Yeah, yeah, and they're the ones that benefited from the call. So that's the problem.
Here's my next question. Greg Sankey, in what the conference came out and said about this yesterday, was we reserve the right to suspend alcohol sales in the stadium if there is any further issues. Do you guys like that quote unquote threat? Because I'm all about it.
I'm like, you know what?
And let's be clear, man. I think 90% of the people in the stadium are embarrassed by the other 10% of the stadium. I was at Turner Field in Chipper's last game, the infield fly game, and when things started raining down from the outfield, I was like, come on, dude. This is such a bad look.
Because you had Sark even running out onto the field. Saying,
yeah, Sark
stop.
Was embarrassed.
Was that the students?
Yeah,
section?
Yeah.
A lot of it was.
I think 95% of it was. I'm pretty sure it was. You know what's funny is,
and I want to be clear. I'm not coming down on Texas fans. I think this is a very small percentage and a very embarrassing percentage.
How quickly did they get that stuff off the field? I was
Right? It was like they had a vacuum.
I was like, there's no way this starts off.
They had all this. They had Joe Rogan and Matthew McConaughey down there on the field, so they were running around picking up cans too. I'm sure. Hey, my dad was watching the game, and he was like, I don't like that Texas coach. I didn't like the way he yelled. I've never seen Kirby do that. And I said, what? Kirby shoved a player last week. And he goes, I didn't see it.
What are we talking about? I love the fact. I love that both of them are fired. I wish Kalen DeBoer would shove somebody right now.
I said, really? I go, Kirby gets his way out. No, I've never seen him act that bad. And I go, he shoved a player last week. And he's like, I didn't see it.
Yeah. I haven't seen him act that
bad. My dad turned into a tip. He pulls for Georgia.
I didn't know that.
He does. He pulls.
Dr. Squid?
My dad believes he should always pull for every home team. Like, he pulls for Tech, too. He doesn't pick one over the other.
Gotcha.
But he always wants a home team,
what
home
about
team
when
to
they
win.
Play each other?
Yeah.
I don't think he really cares. I think he picks whoever has a chance to be, like, win a national title, whatever.
Your dad's
which is
just like
never
me.
Tech. Yeah, imagine.
For all the home
you know
teams.
What?
You know
what? One of the Rob Lowe's of this show. The NFL hat. You never seen that? You don't get that reference, Michael?
Yeah.
Rob Lowe went. I forgot what NFL
Super Bowl.
Game he went
it was
to.
A Super,
it was
Bowl.
Super Bowl. Thank you. He wore an NFL, just the NFL logo hat.
Yeah, they showed
a T-shirt on.
They go, oh, look, it's actor Rob Lowe. And he's sitting there, and he's just wearing a hat, and it says NFL. And it's like, dude, you're so vanilla.
Everybody loves it. It's my favorite thing.
Well, I'm more so just talking about the home teams, like the Falcons, Tech, Georgia.
Eagles.
Sixers.
The Eagles, don't,
Phillies. Your
here
home
you go
teams.
Starting false narratives again. You were doing so good.
I just
you were doing
the neutrality
so good.
Between
now you
the
go
Georgia
backwards.
And Georgia Tech stuff. So, but anyway.
But, yeah, it was funny. My dad turned into a Georgia fan.
I know that Georgia fans are going to hate this. I actually liked the fact that in the end the right call was made. I hate how they got there, but in the end, I'm okay with it because it was the right call.
I can't agree 100% with that because you're basically rewarding childlike behavior. Yeah.
All right. Well, hopefully, Dave Archer can always get you in check when you're acting like a child. He's joining us next here on the morning shift to break down this Falcons loss. We'll be right back on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are in our 8 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. That yawn was trying to come out of me there. So I jumped ahead. Dave Archer is going to be with us later. And how could I have even tried to skip the best part where you guys...
I know why.
What?
I know why you don't want to do Man Up today, because I don't have to. I mean, I was 3-1. Even the one I missed,
There are plenty of other aspects in your life where you can man up. Do you want to play the intro music?
First off, I want to make a declaration. Or Dylan, I want to throw up something for
getting on the soapbox.
Shouldn't whoever had the best week or the worst week the week before have their voice in the I was wrong?
Well, they're not going to change it just
you could
for
have
week
two.
Seven.
You could have two. No. You could have two different intros.
Well...
This man has 1 week where he goes 3-1, and he's beside himself right now.
Or we could even do this. To me, this is the better solution. We can get Mike saying I was wrong, and we can just add Mike's voice to it. That way, both y'all's voices in it.
All right.
I'm fine with that.
I'm okay with that, because I just don't like what you're trying to sell to the fans and the listeners that I'm wrong.
Fans. You have fans.
Let's go ahead and do a little production on the air. Mike, will you say I was wrong for me?
He'll have plenty of moments to say it.
Oh, just ruined it.
You'll have another chance to say it.
I've been saying it all show because I was wrong about Georgia. I was wrong.
Not the first time.
Yeah.
Look, I'll go ahead and start.
You were wrong, too.
My bad. No, I got Georgia right. My bad pick was the Texans, the Packers. It was 47.5 over. They scored 46 points total. Dylan, what's the first thing you think about Houston?
Explosive offense.
Okay. All right. That's it. What's the first thing you think about Green Bay?
Highly paid quarterback that was injured early this year.
But y'all, they can score points, right?
Sure.
The over-under is 47.5 at Green Bay.
Mm.
Yeah. I'll take the over in that game.
Yeah. I was going to say, that number
tells
you.
Freaking day. Take the over. Houston at Green Bay, 47.5, and you'll be able to take the wifey out to a steak dinner.
Mm.
Tell her it's on squid because you won money from me.
Psych! Wow. That's the wrong number.
It's a short miss, man, but I'll give you credit because I definitely thought you were heading in the right direction. And like I said, I was like, that number actually, that points towards the over as far as Vegas goes. So I'll give you hats off. You ready for this? You ready to clip this, Dylan? You ready, Georgia fans out there? I was wrong. by the Georgia Bulldogs and what I think they could accomplish. I picked Texas to cover that number. This one's been very, very tough for me throughout the week. I've gone back and forth. Here's what I'll say. Nick Saban and Kirby Smart are so good at making sure their guys on defense play to rules. They have rules for everything. This man, second man out, flat defender, release. Guys like Steve Sarkisian know that. And more times than not, they are able to take advantage of those rules because they know those rules. So I think that Georgia is still a very good team. I'm not ruling them out of anything in the long run. But I think that this atmosphere might be a little too much for Georgia. I actually like Texas. Minus the points.
Nobody believed. Nobody gave us a chance. Your whole network doubted us. Nobody believed us. And then they tried to rob us with calls in this place. And these guys are so resilient. We talked about intent. What was our intent when we walked on the field? Our intent was not to take pictures.
We put the whole
not to do all the superstar stuff. Our intent was to come eat and be hungry. I'm not interested in all the bells and whistles. What I want is a team that fights their ass off. They did tonight.
I said I was wrong for the love. We had to put the whole Kirby on the back
well,
of that.
Well done, Dylan.
I had to make you feel it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, well, Mike, what atmosphere are they not ready for? Beer cans being thrown at them?
Stop.
I mean, I told you that Georgia was going to go in there and cover.
With like 2 seconds remaining in this pick, Bo picked Georgia. Can we go back and play that, Dylan?
No,
how about that one?
No feel for this game because I think Texas is going to win this game. I think Texas is the better football team. Georgia is a team that is kind of switching identities. What I mean by that is there used to be what we always thought was a run-first team. They're a throw-first team this year. A lot of that has to do with some of the injuries. Defensively, they are nowhere near the dominant team they've been. I think Texas is going to win this game. I just don't know which Georgia shows up. The first half against Alabama, the second half against Alabama. I would tend to lean towards y'all. I'm just terrified this game is going to be really close. I think Georgia loses this game, but I think they might cover the 5. But I'm picking Texas.
Could be like an Ohio State Oregon type point thing.
So there, picking Texas just like we are, but you just wanted to throw that caveat in there just for Man Up Monday. So
you know
we play
what?
The sound back that you don't sound bad. Okay.
You talked me into it. I'm going to take Georgia to cover and lose.
Well, you really don't have a feel for this game then.
I don't.
Man, just zigged when everybody else zagged. Okay.
Boo this man.
I guess that the counts.
Hey.
Boo this man. And he said it with his chest this morning. Look, 3-1. 3-1. I don't know what this guy was talking about. I'm 3-1.
Hey, here's it. The difference between you and me? I literally said I didn't have a feel for the game.
That's the first thing out of my mouth.
And you went, no, you didn't. You said, oh, I think Texas.
The first thing on my cut was, I've been going back and forth all week on this game.
Now, you were very boisterous.
Anyhow,
for Georgia.
I stand on my
for
pick.
Proving me right. Then I said they could cover.
I was wrong about them dogs, boy. They came out ready to go. Kudos to them. Hats off.
If we're continuing to brag for me, which we should, I was 3-1. The only person who went 3-1 on the show. I told y'all Army could score. I told y'all that Daly was a good player. 51 over. Army almost covered it by themselves. Army is 6-0. They're a 16-point favorite. They have scored 35 or more in 5 of their first 6 games. The over, 51.5 against East Carolina. Give me Army and the over of 51.5. The dollar score keeps it going. What Dennis Dodd tell us? The most efficient passing team in the country.
I love America.
That's right.
They're pretty good. That's a pretty good football team that Army's got, man.
Yeah. East Carolina fought back a little bit in that game.
Yeah.
Not enough, though.
Yeah.
They fired their coach, too.
All right, so my good on the week, and I pointed to this, it was 5-1, Texas A&M, facing off against 1-5 Mississippi State. The line, a little bit too small, and I knew that maybe Vegas saw something in Mississippi State the rest of us don't see. Final score on this one, Texas A&M 34, Mississippi State 24. Dylan, what I say on Friday? If you just look at records, there's a game in the SEC this weekend that I think could be monumental. There's a 5-1 team, ranked number 14 in the country, facing off with a 1-5 team who has been an underdog in just about every matchup they've played this year. And Vegas loves games like this. And you would look, you'd go, man, that spread, 5-1 versus 1-5, that's got to be like a 35-point spread or something like that. It's not. It's 17 right now, and I'm talking about Mississippi State against Texas A&M. Vegas knows that Mississippi State plays hard. Texas A&M, they have a good record, but they've been in a couple of bare-knuckle brawls along the way. I don't think Mississippi State even comes close to winning this game, but I think Mississippi State covers the 17.5 that they are getting in this game. Give me Mississippi State to lose by 10 against Texas A&M in a big home game this weekend. That's a 4:15 start. I like Mississippi State plus 17.5.
This mother don't miss.
No, he's
good. That mother don't miss, man.
That's you see, not Bo, the sound that, bite you should play. He
that
was two and
is
two.
A man up. That is, look, I said, hey, they ain't going to come close to winning, but they're just going to lose by 10. 34 for Texas A&M, 24 for Mississippi State. Who was spot on?
What
was that? We'll start calling it spot on
Monday.
What was
the difference in mine, that pick and my Army pick? I mean, or my Georgia pick where I said they would cover. That's spot on. They covered. That's all that matters.
Anyways, man. That was fun, though.
Can I say something, though?
I'm sure you will anyways.
I think two coaches that felt a lot of heat early in the season. I know it's Jeff Lebby's first year at Miss State, but he felt a lot of heat early in the season. You know what I've seen from Mississippi State is they've gotten better.
They play hard.
Each week. They have gotten better. They have played a tough schedule, too. Having to play Georgia and Texas A&M, two of the more physical teams in the conference, back-to-back weeks, that's not easy. And they fought in both those games. They fought against – they were down big to Florida, yeah. Fought back. But I'll say this. My Florida fans are going to be mad at me. But Billy Napier, Florida has gotten better each week.
I'm going to get mad at you about that. They have.
And,
that's a fact.
And they now Graham Mertz is out. And I'm going to say this. And I was talking to – I think me and Mike Conley were talking about this yesterday. The way Napier handled the DJ Lagway, Graham Mertz quarterback controversy that kind of popped up was actually done as well as you can do it because it was Mertz's team in the locker room. That came out. You had said that. Me and you talked about that. Yep. But then it came out in the locker room, Tiff, that it was Mertz's team. Every third possession, they gave Lagway some time. He got some valuable time in some key spots. And then when Mertz gets injured, Lagway has to step in, and he played phenomenally, I thought, in his first SEC start.
I'll also say this. If LSU can't get by Texas A&M this week, we are staring down the barrel at a Texas A&M versus Texas top five matchup potentially at the end of the season. And that would be epic.
When we come back, Dave Archer will join us here on the morning shift. The Falcons radio network analyst and former QB will be right back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back here on the morning shift and going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find Atlanta Falcons radio network analyst and former Falcons QB Dave Archer joining us here on the show. Good morning, Dave.
Hi, Tiff. Yeah, I've brushed my teeth like 100 times. I can't get that taste out of my mouth for losing the Seahawks. So maybe you guys can help me a little bit.
That's probably a good way to sum it up.
Yeah, that makes two of us, Arch. I woke up in a bad mood because I had to watch highlights of what happened. But, I mean, what do you make of a game like yesterday? Because it just felt like you basically couldn't get out of your own way to win. You know, you had penalties that stumped it. Then you made mental errors. I mean, what do you do to get past a game where it just feels like everything went wrong for you?
Well, getting past it is probably the easiest thing to do. Getting past it, you get to go to work again today. You got to go out, you look at the tape, you try to, you know, look through some of the stuff that maybe was correctable, some of the stuff that were just untimely screw-ups, and then you move on. That's the beauty of you get another one this week. So I think moving past it is probably the easiest thing to do. It's, you know, trying to solve what happened in the game is probably a little bit more of concerning. The flatness with which they came out and played with. There wasn't any energy in the building. There wasn't any energy on the sideline. And Kirk said it in the interview. I talked to him afterward. I said, you know, what happens in that situation? He said, we got to provide our own energy. And so there's lessons learned from that, even though this is a team that we've kind of been excited about how they've come together as a unit and how they've kind of melded together and been able to win some of these close games. It's going to be moments like this. Mike and I have both played in games where you come out and you just don't feel your best and you hope that someone around you picks you up. And as it turned out, it seemed like everybody was kind of in that doldrum state where nobody was picking anybody up. And this is what happens. You get your ass handed to you.
Yeah, well, you talk about brushing your teeth and getting over this one. At least you had Iowa State on Saturday to celebrate. Man, I didn't even have that. I had to deal with the freaking Bama loss on Saturday.
I hear you.
And then watch what I watched yesterday. Dave, I had the question yesterday at some point during the postgame show. What was the worst part? What was the worst part of the Falcons' loss yesterday? And honestly, I had trouble answering that because at times the running game looked electric. I thought Bijan looked as good as he had running the ball since he's been in a Falcons uniform. There were untimely penalties. untimely busted assignments. They made some plays. I couldn't honestly answer it. It just seemed like everything kind of took its turn throughout the game at being something that let you down.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mike. It seemed like just as when you thought that, you know, maybe you could put your finger on some of the three turnovers. Was it the 9 penalties? Some of those penalties were untimely that extended drives. You got off the field on third down, and yet here's a roughing the passer penalty or an illegal use of hands or whatever that extends a drive that allows them to continue the drive, either eat clock or put points on the board. I think probably the thing that I would point to were the miscues, and those are the ones that are the befuddling ones, and those are the ones that, going back to Bo's question, that you go in today and you say, can we fix those? And I think a lot of them are fixable. Kirk's fumble, that's one where he's got to eat the football. I mean, he's trying to do too much there. I think you said that in the post game on his throw to Kyle, trying to push the ball down the field, you know, knowing you're down, you're trying to make a play. I felt like the fumble, the Mafe strip sack that was scooped and scored, I thought that he was trying to do too much there. That's just not something he could do to get out of the pocket. Got to eat the football and take that. You know, the ball goes right through Drake's hands and intercepted. I mean, how many times have we seen Drake, you know, go up and catch that football with those strong hands? That was something that was screwy. How about the blown coverage on the Metcalf touchdown at the end of the half?
Dagger.
You're playing cover two, and I don't know why Simmons is so wide. There's nobody threatening the sideline. There was no vertical threat along the sideline, so Simmons can cheat more towards the middle of the field. That's where AJ expected him to be, and he also was expecting Landman to run with the vertical through the middle. Everybody blew their assignment, you know, and so those are the ones that kind of jump up to me as far as answering maybe piece of your question as to what was the most disturbing piece of it. It was probably the miscues. I didn't think we had that many blown assignments in the five previous games.
Well, if we can maybe talk about some of the positives in this one, not many, I know, but Bijan and the way he was running the football, just why is it coming together for him this season?
Well, he's learning the game, Jeff. You know, it's just a matter of what you can get away with in college that you can't get away with in the pros. I mean, his ability to, you know, trust what's going on up front, trust the blocking schemes, trust his tracks, and knowing what he can do. And then it's just his natural ability to let him, you know, he's not trying to play within a box. He's now turning it loose. He's being the Bijan Robinson that you saw on tape when you saw him at Texas. I think that's something that happens to young players is they're trying to play within the confines of your offense. They're trying to do the things the coaches want them to do at the pro level. And at some point, you want them to be the guy you saw on tape and the guy you went and drafted. And I think that's where Bijan is now, is he's now comfortable in this game. He's comfortable on an NFL field, and now he's turning it loose. And you're seeing why Atlanta went and drafted him 8th overall. He's a top 5 running back in the National Football League. And then you sprinkle in Tyler Algier, who comes in, and Tyler was nothing less than spectacular yesterday when he got his 5 carries too. He ran through people like he normally does. So that 1-2 punch at running back is certainly a positive. I thought the offensive line coming off and blocking. I think there were a number of moments there where I thought the O-line did a pretty good job of giving Kirk time to go through some of his reads. Now, there were 3 sacks there, and some of it might have been Kirk hanging on the ball a little bit too long. Some of it we collapsed a little bit in the pass protection. But I think those are certainly things that you hang your hat on. In these kind of games, it's hard to find the positive, Tiff. But you're right. Bijan Robinson is certainly one of those glowing moments.
No, on Arch, on this show, it's always the offensive line's fault.
Here we
it's
go.
Accountability for them.
Arch, better tell this man I will come across his table at his butt.
I will say, if we I don't want to talk positives, but I think a trend that we're starting to see, because I think we should talk about everything that happened, but one of the trends I'm starting to see is this run defense is starting to tighten up a little bit. Early in the game, they weren't very good, but then they tightened up and only allowed 103 yards on 26 carries. It feels like the run defense is starting to progress a little bit, Arch. I know the pass rush is still not there, but what are you seeing up front on pass rush and run defense?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Bo. I think that, you got the misfit in the run game on the Walker touchdown run. It looked like Caden Ellis was trying to he picked the wrong gap. I think he was coming on a pressure. He's coming on a run dog. And I thought Landman was late scraping over to fill that C gap. And so when Ellis decided to take the B gap, then a good play by Walker and his vision to bounce into that next gap over, that's where Landman's supposed to be, or Jesse Bates rocking down from safety to fit against the run. So I think the only thing that's hurting them in the run game right now as they progress, and I agree with you, they are progressing, is some of their fits. I think they're misfitting the run in a few places, and that's creating some of the creases. We talked about last week, Carolina, you know, they rushed for 115, 120 yards in a game, but I thought most of it came like on one drive, where they got like 40 yards on one drive. So if you can start to kind of dress that up and stop missing those moments, then I think that number comes down to under 100 yards. If you get them down around 90 yards rushing, that limits a team in the run game. Pass rush, I thought that you had a lot of chances. I mean, you were around Geno Smith a ton. You got him on the ground once. James Smith-Williams came around the edge and just power rushed and got him, put him on the ground. But this inability to finish right at the point when you got the quarterback in trouble is a little bit disturbing, and I think that they'll continue to work at it. You need to be there to be able to get the sack. So they're getting there, but they're not finishing. I thought Ebikadi was solid again. I thought you got a lot out of Grady. There was a lot of stunts that they ran, ET stunts, where they got somebody clean coming towards the quarterback. Unfortunately, you knocked him to the ground a couple times. You got a couple of penalties for it, you know, and so I thought there was a progress there, but just still not enough. You're not finishing the play and getting him on the ground.
Yeah, finishing up with Falcons analyst Dave Archer. Dave, I want to go back to that for just a minute. And I kind of feel like in a lot of ways, maybe I'm running out of excuses. Probably not a good way to put it. But we talked a little bit about the style of quarterback through the first three games, or, you know, maybe, you know, how your defense is playing things over the last few weeks. I felt like this was the game for the pass rush. Like we talked about it in pregame, Michael Jarrell was the, you know, the third, fourth string right tackle that was being put in. Had never started a game in the NFL before. I'm like, oh, they're about to go off. And then you get home a little bit, but I still feel like Matthew Judon has not really arrived on the scene. I'm having trouble figuring out why. Then you add in the injuries that you seem to have gotten recently, Lorenzo Carter, obviously, James Smith-Williams during the game. What does the immediate future look like for this group, and how can they begin to affect things in a positive manner down in and down out, and not really look at it and say, well, the scheme is this, and the scheme is that? How can we get home, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, you know as well as I do, Mike, it's going to be, you know, what efforts can you double up if you're that individual? You got to look inside yourself individually. Judon, is he giving everything he can on every play? And I think he's getting double teamed a ton. I think there's a number of times where they're chip blocking him and they're getting an extra set of eyes over to him sometimes. But ultimately, it's going to be on guys up front and their effort to get there. Jimmy Lake's trying to dial up the pressures, and we're playing some zone pressure behind it. We're playing some man coverage behind it. Some of it's working. Sometimes you're getting there and you're making the quarterback throw the ball away. I thought Geno Smith, there were, what, four or five times in the game, Mike, where he had to throw the football away. Now, one of them, I think you got a roughing the passer call, and he was just trying to throw the ball away. So I think you just continue to grind at it and push to try to get better at it. I don't think there's a magic pill. Is there a guy out there you could go get? Trade deadline coming up here in a couple weeks. I guess you can continue to scan that. But those guys aren't just walking the street. They're going to come in and all of a sudden have 10 sacks for you. So you're going to have to do it with this group, and this group's going to have to, you know, look inside themselves when they get in the room together and say, hey, what can we do more or do better to get home? Because you got the guys you're going to have during the season. Those are the guys who are going to have to go to work.
I told you, Arch, we'll just trade a couple of sevens and, you know, D'Angelo Malone, and we'll pick
Here
up
we
whoever
go.
We want. Anybody, whoever we want. Doesn't matter.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard we can get Julius Peppers for a seventh rounder. So that's what's on the market.
There's
right
a chance
now.
You can. Might not take that much.
Yeah, he's got that yellow jacket on. I don't think he can move around very well.
Dave, we appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. See y'all.
That was Dave Archer, former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. When we come back, we've got a Life of Squid. Stay with us here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And don't forget the Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic benefiting Pets for Vets is November 25th. We are almost a month away. There are still some opportunities to get into the golf tournament. We still have registration open. And there are still slots available. But however, they are going fast. Jump in. Don't miss it.
When are we going to get a practice round? Need to get that. Need to get the lockdown. The weather's good this week. Need to make that happen.
Okay. Well, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
Did you freeze?
No, I was thinking.
Reset the computer.
Hey, you want to do a Friday?
Yeah, maybe.
I can play Friday.
Yeah, let me think about it. Yeah, I'm going to give you the let me think about it.
See, this is the problem, Tiff. Is he's noncommittal on anything. Anyways, go to 1990 Game website, events, and you can find a way to sign up. And maybe, maybe you can play a practice round with Mike.
Something you're getting ready to find out, my friend, is that when somebody invites you to do something, you got kids and a wife at home, you don't ever say immediately, for sure. You just say, yeah, I'll get back to you. Let me text the wife.
That's your life, not mine. I will tell
Soon.
I will tell you that Owl Inn, the new Ram beer that is my sponsor for this
segment.
Use
your words.
It is a very good beer for chugging. It's an American lager. And I'll tell you that it's a good beer for chugging, Tiff, because I got to chug one yesterday.
Oh, man.
Because I got off the snod. Got my first NASCAR Fantasy League win. And when you win, you have to chug. Thank you, Dylon.
Only took 33 races.
Thank you. And I brought her home.
You did. Yeah, you did. I was happy you got one before the season ended. There's only three left.
Congratulations.
So.
I really mean that sincerely.
Yeah, I can see it on your face. I'll be posting on
you. Not the meat man the is topic. Back.
But yeah, I got a win, and I chugged a new round. It just felt right to do new round. It's my beer.
Yeah. Are you going to play the audio of your chug?
No.
Because I don't think we have time for it for the rest of the segment. That's how long it took you to get that beer down there.
Oh, you got roasted.
Well, so here's the deal.
I was like, oh, no, don't double clutch.
I'll do it real quick because I'm coming home from the Falcons game. I haven't checked NASCAR, and I'm coming home, and I get stopped at the red line. I go, I wonder what's going on with the race. And so I checked it, and I was winning. And I go, uh-oh. And so then I turned on the race on Sirius. Because the 99 postgame show was in advertisement, and heard some of it play out. Got home, watched the final laps, and said, there's no way I won, because I thought when Bell pitted, I would not win. And then he came back to get second. Logano won. I had both those guys. And then I had to have a cold. I didn't have time to let the beer warm up a little bit, because when it's super cold, Tiff, and you chug it, it's rough on the throat.
Yeah, you struggled through that one.
Yeah,
he looked like he was chugging a glass of beach sand. That's what it looked
like.
Yeah. I didn't look that bad. You're such a jerk. You know it wasn't that bad. You know it. It was nowhere near that bad.
I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't see it.
It was nowhere near as cringy as Tyrese Halliburton's video that he posted to 50 Cent randomly at 4 a.m. with no shirt on and three random girls in it.
Fifth, what's up, brother? Wanted to congratulate you on your Vegas residency. You've always shown love, so I want to show love back. Appreciate you. Congratulations. That's a big, big honor. It's 4 a.m. I just got back from the club, but I got to make sure I show love to my guy. Congratulations, brother. Keep going.
And those are the blondes in the background, as you can hear.
I did not see this video, so I must have been under a rock.
You should Google it real quick before, because we got a couple minutes. We're going to play another
clip. Man.
It was just.
I don't understand.
It was cringy because I'm not sure why he felt the need to do it right at that moment. It was almost like one of them was like, hey, let us be a part of. He was probably talking about it, and they're like, hey, you should be like, get him on Twitter and thank him, or, you know, congratulate him, and we can be in the video too.
Exactly. Well, and here's the thing. We've talked on this. We've talked on this show a number of times before about social media rules that you put in place for yourself, or do you or do you not? I would say one of the rules he should probably put in for himself is do not post on social media after midnight, because then it becomes awkward. And then, you know, there's other factors involved when you lead a club that early in the morning and you get home, and then you probably wake up the next day and go, man, that was probably not a good idea to post that. And that's probably the situation he's dealing with after what he put out there.
I will say that I do believe one of the girls is Jay Jones, his girlfriend. But it's hard to tell.
I do believe that, yes.
It's hard to tell because, I don't know, they all three kind of look similar. Anyways, they're just three blondes that all look the same. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I'm not saying all blondes look the same. I'm saying these three blondes look the same, all right? Sure. My wife's a blonde. She don't look the same as other blondes. These three look the same.
Okay.
Also, I want to give a shout-out to my dude.
Hey, man, thank you so much.
Scotty Scheffler.
Oh, no, not me. Okay. Sorry about that.
I think he had a great season. He was, to me, the golfer of the year. he had a couple rough patches in it, one of which took place in Louisville. And let's just say he's not afraid to take a shot, as he was on College Game Day pick as the guest picker because he's a Texas alum. And when he had to pick the Miami Louisville game, he did it with some fun.
Give me Miami. There's no way I'm picking Louisville at this particular time where I'm sitting right now.
Yeah, not to bring anything personal into this with Louisville, a great city, love the people, but I think Miami's going to smoke
them. Yeah, it's about the best the audio, but he's like, hey, you know what? Not to make this personal, there's a lot of great people in Louisville. I love the city, love the people, but Miami's going to smoke them.
That's awesome.
It was absolutely personal.
Shout out to Scotty Scheffler for that one. Great stuff. I love that.
Sometimes you just got to find a way to have fun with stuff, Tiff, and laugh at the situation. He's obviously been exonerated, but it's...
Sometimes that's what you got to do.
I mean, I think I can do that often. It's kind of a gift that I've been given.
You just don't think of Scotty as being like a witty person, but that was such a witty comment. You know what I mean?
You're going to drive past that delusional comment he just made?
Oh, I didn't hear. I stopped listening to him like 5 minutes ago.
You think somebody wrote it for him? They're like, hey, man, when you pick Miami Louisville, you got to say this.
He probably definitely was thinking about it like on the airplane there where they do the wheels up thing. Probably like, yeah. You know what, man, I'm going to slide this in there when I have to pick this game.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. We will find out what's coming up on the Steakhouse next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game.